hold on to your butts. It's time for a new episode of Destroy All Culture, a sonic death ray from Dimension X that sounds exactly like a weekly podcast hosted by Adam P. Nave and Aiden Morgan. Exposure to Destroy All Culture is 100% fatal, so we put it on the internet. Now listen and die. Lethal effects may take up to 75 years.
And it's episode 151 of Destroy All Culture. I'm Adam P. Nave, and with me as always is Aiden Morgan.
That's me.
Woo!
It's me!
You
know, whenever I see advertisements for It Chapter 2,
yeah,
I automatically think, It Chapter 2, like It Me. So
right.
It makes the movie automatically a lot funnier than it probably is going to be.
I mean, you never know. It could be so bad it's funny.
You never know.
I didn't see the first one. I personally don't care, so
I have no basis
for it being good or not.
It was an entertaining film. It was better than the 1990 miniseries, I'll tell you that much.
Low bar, but we'll take it.
It is a very low bar. Actually,
it's like when they eventually remake Lawnmower Man. It's like, you know, oh, it's better than that. Yeah, no.
When they eventually remake Lawnmower Man,
you know what'll happen.
Yeah, I can picture the headlines from, like, you know, 2032. New York underwater. Also, Lawnmower Man 2.
Right.
Or actually, I think there already is a Lawnmower Man 2. Yeah, Lawnmower Man live action.
Like,
remake.
This time it's a Roomba, you know.
This time, Roomba Man. Yeah, it's an AI gone crazy.
Right.
Yeah, and there was a remake, or not a remake, a sequel, Lawnmower Man 2, Job's War, if I recall
correctly.
That's
right. I never saw it, but I heard about it.
I heard about it, too. But I have, of course, seen the first one, and it was, it was not good.
No, it did not. I mean, not only did it not age well, it didn't start well.
It was born ugly. It didn't age. I was going to say, I should probably watch it again just
no.
Oh, all right. I'll take your advice.
I just, like, why? Why would you want to?
Because part of me now says, watch it again, Aiden, and I'm trapped. It's gonna have to happen.
Huh? Yeah, I get that occasionally, and I'm like, wow, this movie. Like, I remember this movie. It wasn't very good. I should watch it again to see if it really wasn't that good. And I'm like, or I could watch something that actually is that good.
Yeah.
And I say that having just finished. We could start here. Finally, watching something that wasn't that good on purpose. So maybe I should just,
yes,
you know, shut up.
Let's segue into that one.
Okay, because, you know, we both enjoy Sorkin.
We enjoy a Sorkin.
And, you know, I watched West Wing the first four seasons, and I've rewatched them a few times because it's some really good Sorkin.
Right.
But I always stopped at the end of season four because I'd always heard that, like, you know, the rest of the seasons, and I hadn't been watching it live, but the rest of the seasons just got progressively weirder and worse once Sorkin left. And I was like, you know what, maybe I just don't want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. But I started listening to the West Wing Weekly podcast, which is absolutely delightful. And, you know, has Josh Molina as the co-host, and they get, like, everyone from the show on, and like, dignitaries and, like, you know, like, actual political people. It's really fascinating.
Wow.
And they don't hold the show sacred.
Oh, that's
cool. They are firmly willing to call it on to bullshit. Like, the whole Sam Lurie thing in the first season, they're just like, it's creepy, stop it, you know?
Yeah.
And, like, how much they all remember liking, they both remember liking Sam a lot, but then they watch first season, like, and he's not a good character. So they're keeping it honest, and I was like, you know what, I like this podcast enough, I don't want to hear them discuss the last three seasons, but I don't want to not have to listen to the podcast either.
Right.
So I'm going to suck it up and watch the seasons 5, 6, and 7, so that when they discuss it, I will be up to speed and know what they are talking about.
For the sake of a podcast.
For the sake of a really good podcast, yeah.
Yes.
This never happens to people who listen to our podcast, don't worry. But, like, no one's ever been like, let me watch Animal Practice, you know.
Let's watch. I mean, but if they did watch Killjoys as a result of our podcast,
sure.
I would be pleased.
But, wow, those three seasons are a mess.
Oh, really? I mean, I've watched them, but it was back, and I didn't watch them regularly. I would just sort of every so often turn on the TV, because that was the time of world history when you just turned on the TV.
Yeah.
And saw what you saw. Yeah.
Well, okay. So you remember, in the Sorkin years, how the show was, you know, serious, and dramatic, obviously, but it was also warm.
Yeah.
And kind of quippy and loving, and it had time for all these little side characters, and people would get into arguments, but they were arguments about, like, bigger things. They wouldn't just yell at each other to yell at each other.
Yeah, no, that was the appeal of the show.
Right, so season five basically is all of them being mean and yelling at each other.
I do recall this, yes.
Season six, they decide to ignore all common sense.
Oh, God.
That's the only way I can describe season six as a whole. Like, characters with no legitimate background or choices, you know, reason to make choices, are suddenly put in positions that make no sense. You know, people, like, they kind of turn all the characters into the concept of, like, the Marvel scientist. You know, not even Marvel, but, you know, the 50s, like, comic book scientist, right? Like,
yeah,
where it's like they can do anything. So, like, suddenly, like, you know, well, this guy's a speechwriter. He doesn't really do policy stuff, except now he's doing policy stuff.
Oh,
as if he always had been.
Oh, God, that's lame.
You know, Leo has his heart attack, and he's like, there's only one person who I want to succeed me, and it's CJ, the press secretary. I'm like, what? Like, you have your deputy that you've been grooming.
Right.
For, like, a bunch of his career to take over, and you're like, yeah, put this person with no experience into that role instead.
There's only one person who can avert this nuclear meltdown, the dog catcher.
Yeah, I mean, it really, it just blows off any sort of internal logic the show had, while still turning into this kind of generic, dramatic political series.
Mm-hmm.
That started, I mean, like, the Sorkin stuff took itself sometimes way too seriously, of course.
Yeah.
But it would always have those little teeny moments to kind of bring it down to earth and do all that. This lost all those moments. And then season seven, I mean, well, you know, season six also has a bunch of the campaign stuff, and then season seven is like all the, you know, the rest of the campaign shit. And it really does become this other show, because now they're stretched so thin trying to follow, like, all of these different things.
Right.
That, like, all the little side characters that made the show breathe life are just gone. And it feels like there's, like, one person, maybe two, who work in the White House itself. Where they're not really doing anything anymore. You know, it's just, like, it's so weird. And it's not like they were trying to build a sequel to the show and be like, we're going to follow this new show. They knew. But they really did it as if they were building towards a relaunch. Which is even more baffling. So it's pretty terrible, all told. Huh. And, I mean, it won't stop me from rewatching the first four seasons again later. But I think it's going to be longer before I do now, because I have to get these out of my head.
Yeah.
Or at least, you know, get to those episodes of the podcast and hear other people kind of trash them might help.
Yeah, I think you're right. Man, that is, that is some sad stuff. Yeah, I mean, I loved the Sorkin era of West Wing. And the truth is, I just sort of tuned out for the last, you know, three seasons.
Right, because there was nothing there.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, and that is the thing, right? Like, you know, Sorkin's, I think, his best TV stuff is still, you know, Sports Night and the first four seasons of West Wing.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe one day he'll do something else.
I mean, it definitely wasn't Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip.
Oh, well, no shit. although it does make me laugh that, like, A, the last episode of the show cuts to a shot, like, during the inauguration of Sorkin sitting in the crowd.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
And I'm like, okay. That's weird. But no, there are, of course, a lot of people who are like, they should, like, with all the shows coming back, right? Because if you didn't know, in the last, like, 4 or 5 years, when West Wing first hit Netflix, and ever since, it's still highly watched now.
Oh, that's cool.
And so there are a lot of people like, they should do a reunion show. And, of course, the big problem is Sorkin won't do it because he'd have to ignore everything past what he did.
Right.
Like, he has no need of that shit. And no one wants to see it if Sorkin isn't doing it, because that'd be the whole point.
Yeah.
So this can never happen. And we're probably better off.
Probably we are.
Just overall, we're probably better off.
I find the phenomenon of reunion shows to usually be a really mixed bag anyway, even when you've got the entire creative team together. Because there's lots of ones where you realize that they had no compelling need to be together or doing the thing again, except it's a reunion show, so it's just sort of like watching these familiar faces kind of hang out, but there's nothing really like propelling it forward, so it's kind of weird and disappointing, and you want to forget it.
Right, like with the exception of things like, you know, Veronica Mars, it isn't so much a reunion show as a relaunch, and they're trying to make more of it.
Right, right.
But like otherwise you end up with those Brady Bunch specials.
Uh-huh.
If you remember those.
I do.
Which were a special, special thing.
Hey, did you ever remember when they had like a TV movie of with the cast of Leave It to Beaver?
I remember that it happened. I never saw it.
But all sort of like, you know, in the modern era, I don't even remember when it happened. And what it made you realize was that the kid who played Beaver was not a good actor. He was a passable TV child actor, but
sure.
Yikes, you just did not believe him as an adult for once.
Yeah, it went from Leave It to Beaver to Leave Beaver. I'm guessing.
That's pretty much it.
Did
and
they
that's
ever
all
do
I
like?
Remember.
Sorry.
I was going to say that's really all I remember about it. But anyway,
I was going to say, did they ever do like a Happy Days reunion where they just deal with the fact that like Fonzie kidnapped the kid and where Richie's dead brother went?
I wish. Oh,
like that'd be
wish.
My pitch for how you write that, right? Like,
yeah.
Like it just opens on like Henry Winkler getting out of jail. So like, what happened to you? Well, yeah, I kidnapped a kid.
Yeah, the adoption agency the head of the adoption agency just kind of gave him to me, and he went to jail as well.
Right.
So that would be I would love to see that, but I would picture it as like, because Henry Winkler is like such a good. It's like comedic actor now. If you watch things like Barry,
right,
or Children's Hospital, for example,
Parks and Rec, yeah,
yeah, exactly, Parks and Rec. That I just picture him. I can only picture him playing the Fonz as like this desperate schlub.
See,
because
I know
that's
how you
the
do
character
it.
He's perfected. How
I know how you do this. You don't do it as an actual thing. But like, if they do more of Veronica Mars, you just have a scene with like. You know, Henry Winkler getting out of jail for having kidnapped a child and kind of joking about it. And Cliff is his lawyer being like, dude, it's not funny. And that's it. Like, you just never reference, like, anything else. You just kind of have Henry Winkler getting out of jail for, you know, kidnapping a child.
Oh, I love
and
it.
Just leave it to the world to decipher.
Yep. And maybe another show where they have the Happy Days parents, like, going to jail for murdering their eldest son.
Right.
And
yeah, one going into jail, one coming out. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe Aaron Moran. Maybe Joni killed him.
Sure.
For some reason. I don't know. What the hell do I
maybe
know?
Maybe the Beeve did it.
Maybe the Beeve did it. He did it on Veronica Mars. He can do it as
See?
A different character and actor altogether. Yeah, I know, I know. Yes, the whole Beaver thing. Hey, I'm rewatching Veronica Mars. I'm about 5 or 6 episodes into season 2 as we speak.
Nice.
And it is a genuine pleasure to watch that show all over again. Parts of it haven't aged very well. There's all kinds of little sort of little quips and comedic moments that might have worked in the early 2000s, but just don't quite come off the way they.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean
that's always going to be.
Yeah, that's always going to be. So you just sort of take that in stride, but. Yeah, and it's one thing I didn't realize is just how much more sort of confident Thomas and Wright and everybody else were going into the second season. Like they like most of the first season feels like a dry run. Now that I'm rewatching it
okay.
And it's weird because my memory, I was always like, well, the first season was the best, and then the second season, you know, was trying to figure out things to do, and the third season just kind of, you know, shit the bed.
Well, but I mean, I think that's what, right? Like, that's what all of us have kind of stored in our head. Yeah, because that's what it felt like with Distance.
Yeah.
And even kind of at the time, but I think looking back at it now, yeah, you're going to see it in a different light now.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the second season brings in Krista Ritter, brings in Tessa Thompson. It actually has Dick and Beaver as characters. They are
right.
Barely in the first season. They're
yes.
Just kind of side players.
That I remember.
And I think whoever Kyle Gallner, who plays Beaver, he is just like there, just in the last few episodes, really. But it's only in the second season that they make him like a series regular. I think I could be wrong, but and the same
I think,
with
I think you're right, yeah.
Brian Hansen. And the same with Ryan Hansen. I mean, it's weird that they keep Ryan Hansen around because he's such a reprehensible character that they sort of fell prey to like Ryan Hansen's basic goofy charisma.
Well, but I also think he draws an interesting, and he does this all the way through the show. He draws a really interesting eye line through to Logan.
Oh yeah,
because you have the this is what that looks like gone wrong, and this is what that looks like trying to go right.
Yeah. Yes, I think
so. He kind of works as like that warning of like this is, you know, and he's also kind of the O-niner.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, he's just everything as bad as it possibly can be. But yeah, it's fun as hell to watch Ryan Hansen goof around. So that's I think what yeah, that's part of it. But yeah, I'm just sort of sitting there, and now I'm watching again. I'm just kind of anticipating upcoming episodes. Like, I really want to see Ahoy Mateys again, which is the one. It's the pirate radio episode where it turns out to be the principal's son, and it's got all this like really like just amazing sort of little interactions between Belle and Tina Majorino's character.
Yeah,
and I'm just like, come on. Show happen quicker so I can watch it.
Yeah, this also has all the is this the season with the Liam Fitzpatrick and all that, or is that
yes.
first season? Yeah,
no, that's second season. Yeah, and you can see them doing like a lot of, I remember in the first season there's that really kind of not that great episode with Jessica Chastain which
that kind of early. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's sort of one of those ones in which like not only is the story a bit thin, but it's one of those episodes in which Veronica just seems to be on around to witness all these scenes.
Right.
And it's more like, hey, I'm here, things are happening, and I just have to kind of like stand aside while the emotional stuff happens, then I can react. But if you watch, I think it might be, I'm not sure which episode it is. But Ari Grainer plays the daughter of the bus driver who goes over the cliff and takes the kids. And of course, Veronica sets out to investigate whether or not he killed himself and finds out that he was having an affair. And it was like, okay, it's kind of a similar, not in the specifics, but thematically or dramatically similar, in which essentially Veronica is just on hand to witness somebody else's story, but they figured out how to turn it into part of the overall series storyline and cover up what is something essentially kind of dramatically weak by turning it into the overarching plot. And it just, you can see how they've just figured shit out in season two that they were just kind of stumbling through in season one.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. So they just sort of, they have a real handle on the show at this point. And even if the Lily Kane sort of story that, which really made everything stand out in season one with Veronica Mars, even if it's not quite as strong as that, it's still everything else is just a little bit better.
Right. Well, cool. Anyway.
So you'll have to excuse me if I'm a little stuffed up. I have a cold, so yeah. Sinuses are, yeah.
But anyway, also this week there was some Killjoys.
There was a Killjoys. I'm a little surprised that they're still on board the prison ship.
Yeah.
I'm not knocking it. I really enjoyed the episode, but I would have thought in the final season, knowing how quickly they burn through plot, that they're still figuring out how to work through the prison ship issue.
But I feel like this goes back to season one for me. Remember when they did the like, oh look, it's this abandoned ship episode, and we were at the time like, okay.
Oh, okay.
And like every season they always have this one episode that you're just like, but why are we wasting time here? And it's always around like four or five.
Right. And then they
were like, what are they even doing? And that's where they have a flag plant somewhere that you can't see.
Right.
And I'm like, I feel like I know what this one might be.
Well, oh, interesting. I'm wondering, I kind of wondered, like, I was kind of looking around and say, who's doing what? Like, maybe the prisoner I can't remember the Sparling or whatever his name is going to play a significant role. Maybe the Kreshi woman who wants her brother killed is going to be
No, see, I think it really is. I think it really is the entire prison population on that ship for one reason.
Oh, what's that?
The chips.
Okay.
I'm like, okay, implanted chips that can drop them, but could it also make them immune to the lady?
Interesting.
Right. And I was just like, oh, suddenly we might have a ball game in a whole new direction.
Okay. Yeah, they would not waste time with the chips unless it was...
Right, because they weren't used.
Exactly.
I mean, well, they were, but in a different way.
Right.
Yeah, no, and that's what hit me, was just we didn't use the chips. We spent a lot of time discussing them.
Yeah.
And having Nusi crack into them.
Yeah.
And I'm like, there's something with them.
Okay.
So I'm just calling chip use here.
Yeah, I think you're on the right track.
Also, Anila being back.
Yeah, that's cool.
That's unexpected.
that's also what I... Well, as soon as I saw the... when I saw the cube, I was like, oh, is it going to be... Are they going to be going somewhere? And then... Anila steps
right, is it like just full of something? I will say, too, that like I have to admit, as stupid and simple as an effect as it is, I adore those mirror cubes. Ever since the first one, I'm like, it's just a beautiful set piece.
Oh, I know. Yeah, it's a lo-fi, but really sort of... and it reminds me of some of the best kind of like 70s sci-fi sort of sets.
Right. Like just about the prisoner involved. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. It's just really odd. The geometry and the way it all works is just, it just kind of messes with your brain just a little bit.
Yeah.
It's one of those ingenious little things.
And like, because it is reflective, like when we saw this one, it's reflecting all the ground. I was like, oh, is it camouflage? I was like, no, you idiot, it's a fucking mirror. Like, but it's because they do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's actually kind of what I thought. It was like, oh, it's a cam. No, it's just, that's the ground. Okay.
Right.
Fair enough.
So, yeah. Good times.
Good times indeed. No, I'm still on board. I like all things. I kind of like the prison warden character. She's a welcome addition, I think.
Yes. I feel like in a much longer running show, she ends up like somewhere on the rack.
Yeah, exactly.
Because she has kind of taken the Torin place for this season so far.
Exactly. Except for Torin, but yeah.
Well, no. You know what I mean. Like, yeah.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. Yeah, but I think maybe the next episode we're going to see a lot of strands come together.
Yeah.
And I think you're right. I think the chips are going to play a significant role.
Yeah, I would hope so. And it could be a head fake, but it feels like the kind of Killjoy-y plan that, you know, just dumb enough to work.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Also, it was good to just watch... just have a whole bunch of, you know, here's Dutch just kicking a whole lot of ass for fun.
Yes. Yeah, that was highly entertaining. And I did like, of course, a patented Killjoy's fake where they're building up to this fight and then they get shot in the head. I'm like, phew, that's good. Because I also did not want to see Dutch getting, like, beaten up. Like,
right.
My feeling was that she would probably win the fight, but would suffer a lot. And I was like, I don't feel like seeing a character I like suffer.
Yeah, well, so. And it's also, given the quick timeline, we'd have to deal with Dutch being beaten up for the rest of the season. Like...
Oh, yeah, that's true.
So this saves us a few steps of makeup, if nothing else. And riding around like a limping character, you know.
Exactly.
Gotta kind of prepare that.
Oh, speaking of which, how caught up are you on Young Justice?
I am all the way caught up.
I think I am one episode behind. I've not seen episode 22 yet.
Okay.
So maybe next week we can dig into Young.
Yeah, well, actually, digging in next week would be perfect because next week will be the last time before the 3-part finale.
Right.
So that works.
That works really well.
I will just say that I think it was this episode actually that felt like, oh God, they've gone dark.
Well, there's the only thing I know about...
There's a bunch of reveals in this episode.
Oh shit, okay. Because there was one particular, there was an IO9 headline that basically said Young Justice ruined Black Lightning. So I'm like, oh, okay.
I don't think that they did.
Okay. But I mean, I.
But the show just, there is a bunch of reveal that just, and it's not even like it's darker than the show usually goes, it's just something about it and the way it's delivered that
Huh.
just make the entire reveal just feel very icky in exactly the way they wanted it to. You know, don't get me wrong. It was not a
Huh.
mistake.
Okay. No, I'll believe it. I will. I'll probably watch it today, so I can sort of digest it. Anyway, yeah. Well, we'll talk more about that. Anyway, I also watched the second season of Mindhunter.
How is that going? I've heard a lot of people talk about it. I haven't actually seen any of it. I gave up on hunting down my mind years ago, so.
Oh, fair enough. You listen to to Where Is My Mind, and you're like, don't care. Yeah, fair enough.
No,
I
I know
can get
nothing about the show except apparently they hunt mines. I don't know.
They do, yeah. There's and they use the whole mind when they hunt. Like they're not like
I would
sport
hope.
mind hunters. Yeah, they're very conscious, you
Good.
know, mind hunters. But I don't think. But it looks like you know they don't have a license. No, anyway. Mind hunting, yes. Well, if you haven't seen the first season, I don't want to get into the second season too much,
I
but
mean,
I
feel
will
free.
say,
Like I said, I don't
yeah.
even, I literally don't even know the concept of the show. Like, I'm not kidding.
Oh, okay. It's based on true events. It's based on the book about the guys who more or less invented, you know, the behavioral science unit at FBI, the FBI.
Okay.
At FBI, sorry, I feel like Buster going, Mother, I've been to Army. Anyway, and it's created by David Fincher, and he directed at least one episode for the first season and quite a number in the second season. So I don't know what your feelings are on David Fincher. I always have mixed feelings with Fincher.
Yeah, it's sometimes yes, sometimes no.
Exactly. Like he's really good in some cases. Like I think Zodiac might be one of my favorite movies. But I'll also at the same time, I always feel like there's kind of like a 14-year-old boy inside David Fincher who's going, "Oh, look at this head in the box! Isn't it cool? Oh, that's edgy." You know, I feel like his early movies were kind of like sort of semi-coherent edgelord garbage. But
Yeah, it's, you know, it
and
worked on occasion.
on occasion it worked. Yeah, I have a soft spot for the Alien 3 director's cut. Don't get me wrong,
Sure.
but yeah, I at any rate, you'll have to excuse me. My sinuses
You're fine.
are just go oh, cool. At any rate, so this has the characters of Agent Holden Ford and Bill Tench, in the late 70s. In the first season, they're trying to get sort of the behavioral sciences unit off the ground. They're trying to think of a whole new way of dealing with multiple violent offenders. You know, so it's dealing with like serial killers and profilers. And
Okay.
apparently the authors of the book, the agents, actually they were the ones that came up with the term serial killer. So. And they're met with skepticism, etc., from hard-boiled, you know, law enforcement. And then they bring in an academic to bolster their work, played by Anna Torv. And I'll tell you, it
Nice.
is good to see Anna Torv
Yeah,
on
I would
screen
think so.
again. And she's very. Her character is Olivia Benson-esque. Not Benson. What is her name on Fringe?
I thought it was Benson. Isn't it Benson?
Was it Benson? I feel like that's a name
Close
on
enough.
close enough. Anyway, I feel like that's like Law and Order. So it's Olivia-ish enough to give me that Fringe feeling, but she's just very she plays the character with extremely icy figure who slowly sort of reveals herself over the course of
Dunham.
the seasons.
Sorry.
Dunham, sorry. It's Olivia Dunham.
It
Thank you.
just clicked into my head. I'm just like sitting here, like listening to you and going like Benson, no, Benson, no, Benson, no, Dunham.
Yeah,
Anyway.
I think Olivia Benson is Mariska Hargitay's character
Ah.
And then there's Olivia Moore from iZombie. What is it with TV and Olivias anyway?
It's a good sounding name.
It is a good sounding name, but you don't meet many Olivias in real life.
No, but it's a good sounding name. It has like enough syllables that you could say it seriously, but you can also shorten it to Liv.
Yep,
like,
exactly.
Yeah.
It's a great versatile TV name.
Yeah.
Anyway. At any rate. And it touches on some real life cases. So, for example, the BTK, killer, appears in the kind of almost in the background for both seasons. I sort of thought, and I think everybody else thought, that the second season would be all about the two or the three characters tracking down BTK. But it turns out to concern itself with the Atlanta child murders, which is something I didn't know much about. But I guess in around 80, 81, somebody killed like over 20 children, like 20 young black children in Atlanta.
Huh.
And a lot of the season two is about these two characters, Tench and Ford, tracking down trying to track down this killer. But because this is Fincher, it's almost all about the bureaucracy and politics of trying to get things done.
Gotcha.
And sometimes it's great. Sometimes it's like so Fincheresque you want to say stop, please.
It's almost like a parody.
Almost like a parody. Actually, there's this one scene in which. Which is weirdly devoted to Anna Torv's character trying unpacking and setting up an answering machine. And it's 1980, so it's not immediately apparent what the technology is. You just see her sort of, bringing it in, taking it out of the box, and taking it out of the plastic. And it looks dynamic and interesting, but you're like, is it? She does... It's an answering machine. And it's a testament to Fincher that, and I don't even think Fincher directed that episode, but it's Fincher-esque. But it's a testament to like their style that they can actually make this look interesting.
That's kind of awesome, actually.
It is kind of awesome. And then then you think, oh, okay, so it's gonna be used to dramatic effect. And then it's immediately used to dramatic effect as soon as she plugs it in. Like the character's lover phones from like the lobby, saying, "Why won't you talk to me? You have an answering machine now. What's going on?" I'm like, "Wow, good."
That's
it was kind of neat. But also the show. I watched it two episodes on Friday night, and I binged the rest yesterday. But I have to say, it is one of those shows that it's one of the most compulsively watchable shows that is actually tremendously dramatically thin in so many ways that it just went like, as soon as you step back and think about what you're watching, you're like, this is not good, but you watch it anyway. Like the characters get their news from the television so much that you'd think it was ridiculous in any show you watched, but it's so prevalent in Mindhunter season two that it becomes its own sort of strange commentary on the way that the characters are supposed to be at the heart of the action, but everything really significant that happens is stuff they have to watch on television while they're like, what the fuck? Yeah, it's because I mean they should be in a room with somebody telling them what's going on, or at least there when the things happen, but instead they're just watching the news like everybody else. And it becomes a fascinating sort of like motif all its own. I will tell you, if you decide to watch Mindhunter, that the first episode really is not very good. It's kind of thudding and clunky. But the as you go on, it becomes more interesting. Also, some of the pleasures are watching them interview famous serial killers.
Nice.
So, like in season two, they interview Charles Manson,
of course,
for example. And it's a whole
that's
big
going to happen, right?
Yeah, and it's a whole big thing that they really, like, the main character, if you know, Ford, has been wanting to interview Manson because he's a fanboy, essentially. A lot of the characters are fanboys. And then the director, played by Michael Cerveris, a.k.a. September from Fringe, I think it's September, sort of says, oh, I got you, Manson. And then Torv's character immediately says, why are you going to talk to Manson? This has no bearing on your current cases. This has no bearing at all on the academic study that we're doing on serial killers to figure out how they work. You're just doing this because you want Manson, but it's useless. And they're like, yeah, we're going to go talk to Manson. That's what they do. So there's a lot at play in the show that it does well and not well at the same time.
That's fair.
So that's, yeah. But the net effect is that it's still a remarkably entertaining work.
Well, good.
And that's my take on Mindhunter.
Nice. I might have to try it sometime.
Yeah, give it a shot.
Well, it was a very quiet week, and I know you're not feeling well. So if you want to, you know, just cue some music, we can.
We can, unless you have another topic. That's
trying to even think. Like, it really has just been a quiet ass week.
It has, but good quiet. I've been reading a lot of books.
Well, I mean, like, quite in terms of pop culture, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I hosted a trivia.
Oh.
My first ever trivia night. I've never done this before, and we hosted a screening and trivia night of The Big Lebowski.
Oh, that sounds like a lot of fun.
It was fun, and it was for the alt weekly paper that I write for, which is. Finding as it's struggling as all these things are these days with
sure.
media, so we're sort of trying to get a little bit of funds together to help get through. But yeah, Big Lebowski is still a such a good movie, but also I had never thought about the logistics of trivia before, and I had to figure out how to run a trivia game.
Right.
And how to actually make it. And you have to thread a bit of a needle with sort of like you have to have, you know, questions that anybody in the audience can answer, even if it's the first time they've seen The Big Lebowski. And then you have to have ones that are there for the diehards. And then, and then you have to have a few ones that will beat, that will make even the diehards scratch their heads. But the point is not to, I realize the point is not to say, can you beat this? It's to say, isn't it bizarre? Some of these, like, is to entertain people with the weirdness of these questions
yes.
and answers.
Yes. And no, I have helped run a trivia night in recent memory, actually.
Oh, cool.
Where I didn't have to do I was just stepping in to fill in for somebody, so I didn't have to do a lot of the logistics, but even just, you know, helping bounce some questions around and just hearing, like, this is what we do and this is when, you know, you start to put that together.
Yeah.
That it's not so much the game aspect as it is just the social having fun aspect with the room.
But precisely. Yeah. And there are different groups who did different sort of different levels of Lebowski knowledge. And
of course,
yeah. You know, and, my favorite weird bit of trivia that I discovered and became a question, is that the Coen brothers in the run up to the release of the film, they were interviewed by a rug and carpet trade industry magazine about the movie. Because the subject of the article was movies opening up on Memorial Day weekend that used rugs and carpets significantly. And one of them was Godzilla and the other was Big Lebowski. And so the question was, you know, what's the name of the periodical? Mm-hmm. And the bonus was like, what was the date of the periodical? But so it was Floor Covering Weekly.
Nice.
And for years, apparently, this was thought to be a hoax because it sounds like such a Coen Brothers hoax, right?
Sure.
Until finally, somebody at Floor Covering Weekly said, "No, here it is." So yeah, no, we have this here. Here's the copy.
I do have a recommendation for you, by the way. Something else to talk about, but I also can't talk about it.
Oh,
in a weird sense.
Okay.
Comic wise.
Oh.
Jonathan Hickman has taken over the X-Men.
Yes, yes.
And I've has two this. Concurrent series.
House of X and House of M?
House of X and Powers of Ten, even though it's
Powers
X.
of Ten. What is House of M? Why did that come in my head? Oh, who knows?
That's an old Marvel crossover.
Ah, okay. There we go. Yeah.
But, you know, they interchange. So one week it's House of X. The next week it's Powers of Ten.
Right.
So and in the back of every issue is the reading order. But, you know, they also, of course, because it's Hickman, have text pages and graphs. And the text pages and graphs both have very, very small print notation on it that becomes critical to the plot.
Oh, of course.
Like, it is of just... course. But I will say that, like, this is the most excited I've been and the most fun I've had reading X-Men comics since Morrison.
Oh,
well,
wow.
Since Morrison or Jason Aaron's Wolverine and the X-Men run, which if you've never read it, you really should dig up Jason Aaron's Wolverine and the X-Men run. It is amazingly great.
Okay.
Because that was the, you know, Wolverine take, like, the school is renamed the Jean Grey School for Gifted Youngsters. And Wolverine is the headmaster. And it is just joyful, fun X-Men books.
Uh-huh. Oh, cool.
But, yeah, no, the House of X Powers of Ten stuff is just amazingly... It's all the Hickman stuff that everyone loves, right? Like, all the very, very precise, very intricate, very twisty mm-hmm. plot stuff, which is why I can't really talk about
right.
it.
Yes, of course.
But what it has is the thing that I almost never personally get from Hickman books, which is it also has a lot of grounding in getting the characters going.
Oh, nice.
You know, a lot of Hickman stuff comes off as sometimes cold to me, at least.
Yeah, no, I know, yeah. Yeah, cool.
Except when it means to be, at least.
Because I've been meaning to get to the House of X stuff. I mean, frankly, I've just been seeing so much talk about it.
Yeah, no. But the thing is, you need both.
Right. Okay.
And you buy House of X 1, it'll have the reading order. Right now, House of X 1 and 2 and Powers of 10, 1 and 2 are out. The joke to me is that by the time you get to House of X 2. You not only understand why, or rather Powers of X, you understand why in Powers of X, Powers of 10-1, you get why it's called Powers of 10, not Powers of X.
Huh.
In House of X 2, you can now make a case for calling House of X House of 10 and Powers of 10 Powers of X. Like, the names work either way.
Okay.
And that's a weird choice to do.
Hmm.
You know, be sure to confuse your friends.
Okay. Well, the thing is, the funny thing is, like, for all the talk I've seen about it, none of it has been about what actually... None of it has been about the plot, because I have a feeling that the plot is probably too difficult.
Well, over in comic Twitter, I see a lot of people, like, dissecting and discussing the plots.
Oh, okay, no, I'm just talking about, like, on Twitter. People
right.
Sort of...
And I do mean on Twitter, too. It's just, I think I see a different segment of comics Twitter than you do.
Obviously, yeah.
But it is also just... You know, mostly I see people going like, wait, if you look at this one reference here, that changes how you read this over here, and that means this. Like, just trying to decipher the clues.
Mm-hmm.
Which is just incredibly awesome. And there's a lot, structurally, story-wise, because it's Hickman, that is just interesting from a writing standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's in all the talk of, like, you know, oh, comics is sick of, like, event comics, you know, being like the... Here's this big event that crosses over to 20 things. This is event comics the way people used to mean event comics is, and the comics themselves are an event.
Hmm.
Like, everyone is there. It's water cooler stuff. You know, like, everyone... Like, I don't get to read them on the day of release because my comic books usually come late.
Right.
But it's one of those books where I'm still tempted to, like... I'm not going to. But I'm almost tempted to, like, buy them digitally really quick just so that... Because it is one of those, like, you feel like you're missing out if you're not reading it the moment it's released.
Right. Yeah, that's a good question. Like, how would it even work on, like, a Comixology sort of style format?
Oh, it works fine.
It works fine. Okay, cool.
And actually, the first issue of House of X on Comixology, there's a director's cut available, which has all of the layers of the book after it.
Oh,
as
nice.
In, here are, like, the layouts. I know the pencils, the inks, the colors, the lettering. And a bunch of the script, which is still redacted.
Huh.
Because there are bits in the script that play into later issues that they had to redact.
Oh, nice.
Because just in descriptions, you know, one of those things of, like, this, which we'll see again later, or an explainer of what it is you don't want yet. So,
this
yeah, you know, you can
good.
Try that just by getting the director's cut. I didn't want to double dip and buy it, because I'm going to get the trade, too. At which point I'm triple dipping just to get the breakdown. No, I'm not doing it.
Hmm. Oh, by the by, switching topics. I just saw a headline for an article. It says, "Is it more important to run faster or run longer?" I'm thinking it's more important not to run at all because running is stupid.
I think you've cracked it.
I think I've cracked it. I think if they had just listened to me in the first place, they
Right.
wouldn't be wasting their time on this debate. But you know.
So now that I also have my trial of Hulu, by the way, I've decided that my next, like, I'm going to watch a series thing. I think it's going to be Elementary.
Oh, because it's just, I think the finale
Right. It
just
just
aired.
ended.
Yeah.
There are six seasons to catch up before the new season, so it'll be there
Ooh.
by the time I'm done.
Nice.
I watched some of it back in the, like, when it started. I watched the first couple episodes.
Yeah, I remember that.
And I liked it and I didn't, but I've heard that it really does find its feet and become an interesting adaptation, so.
Okay, I will who maybe I will join you in your elementary journey.
Sounds nice. Well, for
Yeah.
now, we should play some music, though, and get out of here.
Yay, music.
Woo!